sound.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone 500.
Greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us again here on the SoundLogic podcast. Today we're discussing album number 89 on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 greatest albums list. This is Baduism by Erykah Badu. Ben, is it Baduism?
You know, as you were saying that, I was like, I don't know that I've ever heard. I'm sure I have heard it. We watched the Grammys back in the late 90s when this album did so well. So I'm sure I heard it said out loud, but it's been 25 years, and I'm really not sure.
Well, I'm sure there's people out there who know, and will probably let us know. But this is the debut album by Erykah Badu. I think I'm saying that right, Badu.
Yeah.
Back to the genre of neo soul, which neo is a really cool genre. We've already done, I know, definitely D'Angelo.
Yep, one of her contemporaries.
Yeah, I guess some of Lauryn Hill would be considered neo soul.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of hip-hop on that album. Yeah, so here we are back again. Is it appropriate just to do some details first?
I need a rim shot first, diggy diggy.
Boom clack. Boom clack. Details, 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 details. Baduism was released February 11th, 1997. As I mentioned, her debut album. She did a duet. I don't know if it was on the album, on D'Angelo's album, on Voodoo. Or no, not Voodoo, because that came out later.
Voodoo.
But something with him, and then she got noticed by doing that, and then in 96 recorded this album. She was at least a primary songwriter on all the tracks, except for one, I believe. Although we've seen in the hip-hop genre and R&B genre, you have multiple and often different producers for each track, very different than some of the other genres. So that's the case here as well, but she's a primary songwriter. Yes, absolutely. Yep. Charted number 17 in the UK, number 2 in the US, although it's important to note that it was number 1 on the R&B charts in both countries, the UK and the US, number 1 on the R&B charts. So not too shabby for a debut album. To date, certified 3 times platinum in the US, so over 3 million worldwide. So commercially successful as well. A few other notes here. It was promoted with the release of 4 singles, On and On, Next Lifetime, Other Side of the Game, and Apple Tree. When this album came out, critics noted similarities between Erykah Badu and Billie Holiday. So that's quite a compliment. A very famous vocalist from the 50s, 60s, somewhere around there. This album won 2 Grammy Awards, she won 2 Grammy Awards in 98 for content from this album, Best R&B Album and Best Female R&B Vocal Performance. There's some notable artists contributing on this album, either as musicians or producers. We have The Roots as a band being credited, and also individual members Questlove and James Poyser, who plays the keys. Also Ron Carter, who I know we've talked about before. He plays bass. I think he was on Voodoo, and he has at least on his Wikipedia page, he has over 2,000 credits. Is the most recorded. So he has appeared on over 2,000 recordings. He's the most recorded bass player as we know it.
Wow.
You probably a lot, like, I didn't know his name before doing this. I think it was the last time we talked, probably was Voodoo. We talked about him. But he's played on like everything.
That's amazing.
So he's the guy you want. Josh Bush from AllMusic said it was innovative, primarily for its sound, heavier hip hop beats over organic, conscientious soul music. And you've noted that that's interesting that this this was innovative, because for us it sounds pretty mainstream, pretty normal now.
Yeah.
I mean, that this, and so if we kind of read between the lines there, this, it's really trend setting, right? This is,
yeah,
a lot of hip hop and R&B and, you know, any other neo soul. It just has this kind of this backbeat, heavier R&B backbeat, organic sounds. Interesting about organic, that I was looking at the, at least who are listed as the artists, there's no percussionist, which makes me want to believe that all the percussion was produced.
Oh, interesting.
It was synthetic, or pre-recorded. Which I don't have a problem with. It's just interesting. I wouldn't have said that. Sounds good. Not trying to say that synthesized percussion sounds bad, but sometimes you can just tell. No, it sounds great.
Well, especially like I was joking about the rim shot, but like for starting and ending an album with a song about needing a rim shot and not actually having a drummer to give you one is kind of an interesting little ironic twist about this album too, I guess, then too.
And it's possible that a percussionist just wasn't listed.
That's
on the page
true.
I was looking,
yeah,
at. So
yeah, true.
That could have happened too.
Well, and I guess Questlove is listed, and that's what he does, right?
He's listed as a writer and producer.
Oh, okay. So
not as a musician.
Not as a contributing musician.
Although I really find it hard to believe that he was there and didn't hop behind a kit at some point.
Right.
Because he did play a lot of percussion on Voodoo.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
That. Anyways, somewhat inconsequential, really. It sounds great.
Yeah.
And this is since we started, this is the 9th reference to Rolling Stone on an album. So we're keeping track of how many times Rolling Stone, whether just the phrase or the name or the band, is referenced. This is the 9th time it's happened. It is on the lead single, On and On. It's mentioned. First time since we did Beggar's Banquet.
It felt like with the 2012 list, especially near the top, we were getting all kinds of references. So much so that we started making this list, and then all of a sudden, it's been a ghost town since then. So I don't know,
yeah,
if they changed their mind on the 2020 list and just haven't lifted albums up as much that include,
right,
Rolling Stone.
Yeah, and I guess that like every time we did an album by the Rolling Stones, that it counted, right?
Right, that's part of it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, those some notes about the album. You want to move to this this cover art, Ben?
Sure.
I really like it. I just want to say that just off the hop. okay, again, look it up if you're not familiar. This feels very mid to late 90s rap and hip-hop font, stylized font to me. I feel like,
yeah,
I had a few different... At one point, I bought a Busta Rhymes album, and I feel like there was kind of... Almost looks like handwriting, stylized handwriting, like
yeah,
printing, not cursive, like printing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that. Bright colors. So the font, it's an image of Erica, or I assume it's Erica, I'm pretty sure it is. I say that because you can't see her face, but two-thirds of the way down, going all the way across,
yeah,
right across the image, is her name, Erica Badu, in yellow. And then underneath on the right, a little smaller, Baduism in purple. I feel like that yellow-purple contrast was very popular on albums in the mid to late 90s. in hip hop. I don't know any background about it, but I just feel like it's familiar. And then we have the image takes up the whole cover, black background. It's a side view of Erica. She's got a sleeveless dress on, a large bangle on her wrist. She's got her head bent down, her hand up around, kind of around the back of her head, so that her arm is covering her face. You can't see her face at all. She's got a beautiful head wrap on, brown, lots of brown. So her dress is brown, you know, with brown tones, brown on the bangle, a lot of brown tones. And then this bright yellow and purple popping out on top. So I love the color schemes. We've talked about 90s design often not making any sense at all, especially on things like compilation. We've talked about different albums. We're going, what was going on here? This kind of makes sense to me. This kind of makes sense to me. I like it.
Yeah. I don't remember where I read this now because I can't seem to find it anywhere, but, someone talked about it feels fitting for someone who became known as sort of the queen of neo soul to have like a large headdress, almost like this is her accepting the crown of this new neo soul movement that she started, which is both got a lot of swagger with it and also kind of cool to to have that.
Is that kind of an unofficial title she has?
Yeah, Queen of Neo Soul. Yeah,
that's awesome. I didn't know that. I'm not disputing that at all. I think it fits. Yeah. So really, really cool image. Neat image. We've talked about even recently debut albums. Like, is the one where you have your face on the front, like you want.
Yeah.
And you know, to not have your face there is a interesting choice.
Although she became maybe more so than when she was breaking through, known for her hair.
Yes.
And that sort of, like, I don't know if it's got some African background with the print that she chose to wrap her head in, but I don't know, there's something black about this image that says sort of like power and strength, and she's almost bowing too in a humble posture as well. I agree with you. There's something really neat about it, and I'm sure there's a lot of symbolism here that's missed by two white guys like us.
and Ben, I thought some of those things as well, but I really don't feel I'm really qualified to comment on that. You know, like, absolutely. You know, it bugs me when I say, or other people say, African culture, because that's so ridiculous. It's a ridiculous phrase to me, because that's like saying, you know, Western culture or Asian culture. Like,
right. It's just too vast.
Many, many countries, many different backgrounds and ethnic groups and cultures, and, like, you know, so
yeah,
yes, from somewhere in that massively diverse continent.
Yeah, right.
I think there's some cultural significance there, and that's all I feel qualified to say. it's a beautiful, her outfit, the jewelry, the dress, the headdress is gorgeous, and it's great.
Yeah.
And it's something that seems familiar. Like, even though I hadn't listened to the album, I feel like the image was familiar. And as I'm listening and researching this, just I knew who she was. I knew some of her music. I knew she was significant. I didn't realize how significant, impactful to modern music and to the genre of neo soul and to modern music in general. I really didn't quite grasp the impact as I do now. It's pretty impressive.
She broke in at this like time where, I don't know, this is again a bit of a generalization, but female artists had to almost be in your face, overtly sexual,
Right.
Like massive, massive voice, something like bigger than life. And this mm-hmm. album is subtle. There's a lot of really good stuff there, but it's like laid back and chill and neo soul. And it's fascinating to me that I definitely knew her name, maybe because of the awards and accolades she was getting, but I knew very, very little about her, even though this is right in the prime time of when we were consuming just all the music we could, right? I know a lot about peers of hers, relatively speaking, compared to her. And I don't know why that is, but I'm glad to get to this album to maybe wrestle with that for a little while, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to move into the music here. So this is a new album for both of us, right? You didn't recognize anything here?
I don't think so. I mean, as the more I listened to it, the more some of the tracks felt familiar to me, but none of them jumped out as like, oh, that was the single. I knew that one from the radio. No, nothing really for me.
It was a really interesting experience because I opened up the album, hit play, took a quick look at the tracks and went, yeah, I don't, I know Erykah Badu, but I don't know any of these songs. And then after the intro, On and On came on, and I found myself, like she would say a phrase and then I would get either the next syllable or the next phrase. I was like, oh, I recognize this. Like, I remember hearing this. And I listened, I know I've talked about this before. In grade 9, grade 10, I was, didn't have much of a social life outside school. And in the evenings, I watched a lot of music television. And that would have been exactly when this was on. And I know they played this kind of stuff a lot. So,
yeah,
it's buried in there somewhere in my memory. And mm-hmm. Things kept coming. Oh yeah, like I know that next lyric, or oh, that part's familiar. And all of a sudden I was like, I do know this song. I couldn't have said that beforehand, but it was definitely digging up something in my memory. But that was it. I didn't recognize anything else.
Did you dig into what On and On's video was? Did you go and try and track it down?
No, I didn't.
Huh. Makes me curious.
You should have, eh? That's how prepared we are, folks. do tons of research. We've talked about the general feel, that it's really laid back, really chill, very relaxing, very smooth. It's soul music. It's neo soul. Really slick beats and got that kind of that synth, that very stereotypical 90s slow jam synth kind of thing.
Yeah.
Was there anything that jumped out to you, any track or anything particular that jumped out to you when you listened to this?
Well, I know we're not necessarily lyrics first people, but there's a lot of poetry present here, in that sort of slow groove, tackling a lot of different issues and a variety of different subjects as well. It feels very contemplative to me, and I really enjoyed having it on in the background, because it plays really well that way. But
yeah,
I almost felt some embarrassment for that too, because I feel like there's a lot more depth to these songs than I've had the time to really dig into them because of some of the issues she's talking about. I think what it means to be a Black woman, issues of poverty and wealth, issues of class and future generations. There's some really interesting stuff here. But yeah, I found myself just like enjoying the slow groove in the background rather than really giving it what it probably deserved.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes that's we use that descriptor to describe both positive and negative and different contexts.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Like, I feel like it's just something I put on in the background. I feel like it's something I could really have on in the background. You know, it's like two, can be two totally different things.
Yeah, and sometimes I think it has to do with what we've previously listened to as well. Like Bitches Brew wasn't too many albums back, and that was something that was like disorienting to have on in the background.
Yeah, for sure.
Really good, but like hard to do anything else but think about this complicated music that's going on. And so
yeah
to get to this now where you can just press play and be like almost like stepping into a hot tub, just like okay, I'm gonna relax now.
that's a really good way. It kind of just washes over you, this
wraps
music.
You up. Yeah,
really nice, really nice. I mean, her vocal is so good, but it's so smooth. It's not jarring in any way. Like, it's powerful. It's powerful. She's got great range. She's got great tone.
Yeah.
Great control. You know, all the things you want from a great vocalist. I think she does her own harmonizations for most tracks, if not all. So, you know, it's a great blend. Yet it really just slides in there. You could have it on the background without, you know, you can't do that with every vocalist. Really nice. This was an album I did struggle with kind of any one particular track really jumping out. Because it's all, you know, it's got similar, a lot of tracks have similar tempos, similar feel. They are certainly unique and distinct, but they really flow together nicely, and it's just all got that very laid back, smooth feel. So that,
you're right,
that made it hard, and I would like to listen to it more. Like, I feel like I haven't listened to it enough to really comment on all of it. I've listened to it a few times for sure and really enjoy it, but this is something I would be more than happy to put on again, just to have on, not in a,
to savor it a bit more.
Yeah, like either I could listen to this either in the background or intently. I would be happy with either. Like, just it's great, it's feel good, but it's also something that I think you can sink your teeth into a bit if you want.
Yeah. Well, and I would say putting a little bit of time between each listen helped a little bit too, with some of that, like you were saying, the whole thing melting together. Like, Rimshot came on first this afternoon. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this one. This is kind of cool. And then On and On came on. I was like, oh yeah, I know this one too. And then Apple Tree, I was like, don't come around my apple tree. Yeah, I know this one too. And suddenly I was like, okay, yeah, maybe there is something more here that is memorable, that just takes a bit of time and familiarity. That, you know, sometimes it just happens with albums that you got to give them a bit more respect for the little nuances, especially when the music is a bit more subtle and familiar sounding from track to track, to really start to figure out what the nuances are. It's interesting to think about this now, because I know there are some ties, I guess, with what people are trying to do with neo soul and jazz music. But I felt that on my first few listens to Kind of Blue too. Like, it's good jazz music that I can have on the background, but none of this stands out to me. It was only like the third or fourth or fifth time through the album I was like, oh yeah, I remember this line, this refrain, this, the way this is built out here. Some intentionality here that I didn't notice previously.
Do you want to pick a favorite track at this point for our Spotify playlist?
Sure. I'll go a little obscure. I didn't get to this one as frequently as the first several tracks, but I discovered, thanks to Wikipedia, that the 10th track, No Love, has a 1985 sample from Stevie Wonder, one of my newfound favorites. So I'll pick No Love as my choice on this one.
That's really cool. Yeah, I saw some of those samples too. Not a ton of samples on the album, but a few.
No, but it then led me to his song, which I'd never heard before, and got some enjoyable mid-80s Stevie Wonder synth in my head today.
a little different than some of the 70s Stevie Wonder we've listened to. I'm gonna go with On and On, the lead single.
Okay.
Great track.
It is.
Really good. What are you waiting on? Any other general comments on the album there, Ben?
No, I'm itching to get to some of our reflections because I think that'll be really insightful with what else we kind of compare it to or bring up here as we try and place it in history. So yeah, let's dive into that if you're okay moving on.
No, absolutely. So I want to start with you. What has aged well here? What maybe hasn't aged well? What are your thoughts?
This doesn't feel terribly dated at all. It feels slightly different than maybe a bit more upbeat R&B that might come out on the radio today. You know, the slow jam is definitely still a thing, but it's like, you know, I'm thinking of like some of the Beyonce albums we've listened to. She usually has a track or two that's a slower pace.
Right, yeah.
But it's kind of like album filler rather than her lead single. But like, it doesn't sound production-wise like it's that far removed from what Beyonce would have had on a...
Yeah.
On Lemonade or something like that. So I think it's aged exceptionally well.
Yeah,
and I think for a 25-year-old album, it just sounds so cool still.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I don't know what it is about her voice, because I think you said earlier, and I agree, it doesn't really stand out as like Aretha Franklin, like exceptional vocalist, but she's just really good at what she does. And she's able to create atmosphere and attitude with her voice in a really... The only thing I can keep thinking of is it's cool.
Yeah.
At least for me. So I think it's aged extremely well, and I don't really feel like anything has aged poorly. Perhaps the font on the front cover, if I had to like reach for something. I don't know. How do you feel?
Similar. I think it's aged very well. I think that this album could be released today and you wouldn't have to change much for it to fit in with some of the R&B sounds we hear now. A little more produced, a little more electronic. I think the beats would be a little different. But there's a lot of very organic sounding music coming out today as well. I think that kind of synth, that 90s slow jam synth that we talked about would be maybe the only thing that we don't hear as much. I think when we hear it today, it's a little kind of ironic, used ironically when people use it. Other than that, you know, and I think just to clarify her vocal, I think I want to clarify my comment was it's not jarring.
I think
her vocal is exceptional. It's just not, it's not jarring. It doesn't kind of, I mean, an Aretha, a great comparison. An Aretha Franklin vocal smacks you up the side of the head and makes you pay attention. This gently nudges you towards the warmth of the music in a different way, you know, like just draws you in as opposed to shaking you awake. You know, an Aretha or a James Brown or something. This is just so gentle and warm, beautiful vocal. And I think that vocal's still, we still have the, you know, the powerful female pop vocalist, but there's also a huge place for a warmer vocal. I think you could release this album today and really wouldn't have to change much for it to people to go, oh, this is good. You know, like, not, oh, this is a 25-year-old album, as you said. I don't think you'd necessarily know. Because the sound, the instrumentation and some of the style is, obviously, because it's neo-soul, is stuff that was used even 20 years before this.
Yep.
So it's not like, you know, it's a 90s sound necessarily. It's just a very timeless sound.
I'm sure that this is because we've already mentioned his name, but D'Angelo's Voodoo, I remember feeling similarly when we were talking about trying to place it in history too. Like, it just sounds good. Nothing exceptionally remarkable, but nothing that also stands out as glaringly like old either.
No, just kind of
well done for what it is. And similar people working on it too. So yeah, maybe if you want something to be timeless, get Questlove and the Roots to help you make something.
Absolutely, I would. So let's move on to our last segment here, the position. Number 89, best album of all time. What do you think about that, Ben?
I'm a little surprised by it, partially because it doesn't have the... I mean, I know it had four singles, but at least in my mind, there nothing jumped out at me right away as like, boy, this was on every radio station back in the day. Maybe it was, and I was just listening to the wrong radio stations, but I feel like maybe there's a popularity element that it wasn't as massive as some of the other albums on this list that we've tackled so far. I'm starting to be more aware of the influence that she's had, and especially that one review that said this was cutting edge for when it came out with the sort of heavy beat in the background. Maybe it was kind of innovative in the same way that it's hard to imagine a time before bands that sounded like the Rolling Stones. It's hard to imagine a time before this kind of music too.
Right.
Existed.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So maybe simply for the seminal nature, it does deserve to be this high. I guess I'm a bit surprised by it, but maybe I shouldn't be.
My knee-jerk reaction was it's a little high, but the more I think about it, the more I think it makes a ton of sense. If you think about all the, especially some of the late, when I say later 90s, like anything after this into the early 2000s, kind of female-driven R&B, I mean, it really sounds a lot like this, and I can't help but think how much this, you think about Brandy, Monica, even, I know she was maybe started a little earlier than this, Mary J. Blige, then Beyonce. Think about all that stuff. It has a lot of the elements from this. And I think she really did start a trend here and bring that soul element into popular mainstream, if you will, R&B music. And then if you think about today's music and how so much of popular music has that core of kind of an R&B or hip hop sound, hip hop beat. This is exactly at the cusp of all that starting, leading into what popular music is today in a lot of different genres. So
yeah.
I think the influence and impact of this, or if not this, because I feel a little ignorant to comment on all this stuff, if not this, but things that came out around this time that sound just like this, then yeah, I think it makes sense here. So
yeah.
I'm gonna go, yeah, that's okay. Again, not like super super recognizable every track, or at least not to me. You know, a white guy in Ontario, that don't know how much weight that has, but I think there are more successful, more popular albums that are a little higher, and that's fine. But this is, I could see why, Miss Education of Lauryn Hill, that's in top 10. I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
This, I get this here. So, yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well said. But I think this next part that we talk about, other albums on this list, maybe shed some light onto an increasing recognition of what she did in that late 90s era.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking about when the 2003, was that the first list?
Yep.
When it came out, this album was only 5 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we hadn't fully realized the impact that she had made at that point.
Yeah, I agree.
We should have maybe realized it 10 years later when the next list came out. But, but that was, it wasn't there. It's taken until now for any of her music to be on this list. This one here at 89, and then another one not too far away, number 158, Mama's Gun, which came out a few years later in year 2000. So We've got a more diverse list of voters who were clearly listening to more diverse selection of music and influenced by it. And yeah, maybe this is a stark reminder to white guys like us from Ontario, that some of this stuff is really powerful and profound and culture shifting too.
Absolutely. Any final comments on Baduism?
Just add it to the list of albums I should probably spend more time with, I guess.
Yeah, and, yeah.
I guess whenever they put it at the 2030 list or something like that, and we get a chance to revisit these albums, we'll be able to dust them off then.
I'm not ready to think about a new list yet. So
yeah, we got to hurry up and get through this first one.
too soon. So that's it for this review. Yeah. Join us next week. We're going to talk about album number 90. So wrapping up another 10. We're After the Gold Rush by Neil Young.
Oh, Canada.
Yes, another Canadian artist. Some little bit of CanCon. Until that time, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those around you. And certainly we hope you'll join us again right here on the Sound Logic Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our Sound Logic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.